everyone, and welcome back to the Time Shifters podcast. We are back in studio. This is me, Christopher Page. My co-host, of course, is Matt Flynn. Welcome back, Matt. How have you been here lately?
I'm good. Been busy, a little tired, but this is always fun to get back to.
Yeah, it's always good, and I think we'll have some good stuff to talk about. Best place to start is we did get a couple emails from our friend Floyd, who emailed us.
Our one listener.
Our one listener. Thank you, Floyd. We know someone out there. He wrote in, he actually got two emails. He thought of something after he already sent it. So the first email, though, that in he writes, in regards to the remake of the remake episode, he said, let's judge it by the remake criteria set forth in the episode. Was it different than the original? Yes, because I wasn't in it. Was it better than the original? No, because I wasn't in it.
He says, whose fault is that?
Just kidding. He really enjoyed the episode. He believes that if a film is based on a previous written work, then it's not a remake, no matter how many films came before it based on the same source.
Okay.
They really aren't re-anything. They're just telling a story. However, I think it can become a remake if the new film pretty much tells the exact story the previous film did. And I think it's a little bit what we were talking about with The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
It didn't go back into the original source material.
Right.
It just sort of mimicked the film.
Yeah.
51. Yeah. He goes on, as for remakes, I think they can be done well without altering much of the original film. I'll use Beauty and the Beast as an example. The new live-action film will bring in those who may consider the hand-drawn animation outdated and too old. A sad viewpoint to have, to be sure. However, the live-action film may make them want to actually watch the original. And I'm anxious to see how they honor this classic animated film with the live-action version. Why alter a great story? Sure, it isn't new for those of us who have seen the original, but it will be for all those who haven't. I've seen some remakes that weren't as good as the original, but were still good movies. I thought the RoboCop remake was good. It didn't have the satire, the extreme violence of the original, but it still had the emotions of this man becoming part machine. This was the one thing that I thought made the original RoboCop really shine, and I'm glad they kept it in the new one. I never saw the remake RoboCop, did you?
I started to. It was hard to watch. And then I just sort of stopped and didn't go back. I probably should, because I like the cast, but it dragged on with like, all right, we're training him. See how we're training him to be the RoboCop? And I'm just sort of like, we've been at this, I think, for days. What's happening? Just, can we get to it? Get to the movie.
Gotcha. He says, the day I listened to the podcast, he was watching Reels, R-E-E-L-Z, that evening, and they had a special on the death of Steve McQueen. The story detailed his fight with cancer and the alternative treatments he sought in Mexico. For the show, a doctor went over all his medical records to get an idea on what was his cause of death. After his operation to remove as much of the massive tumor as possible, the doctor concluded his organs just started shutting down due to the cancer and the trauma of the alternative treatments. He said he found it ironic that I was watching this show shortly after listening to your news segment about the bullet Mustang being found. So, a little tied in there. He then follows up with another email, I think just like a couple hours later. I think it was the same day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. He does. He says, I forgot to mention in my previous email that he liked the Thing prequel. We brought that up over the episode. While not a great movie by any means, I appreciate the creators of the film attempting to stick as close as possible to the events described in John Carpenter's The Thing. It was cool to see what happened at the Norwegian base and seeing it all lead up to the chopper chasing the dog. And it ended with the heartbeat music of The Thing. At the end of the film, I wanted to watch The Thing again, not because it was a much better movie, which it is, but because I wanted to continue the story even though I knew what would be happening. I had the same reaction when I saw Star Wars Episode III. At the end of the film, I wanted to jump in and start watching A New Hope because I wanted to continue the story. It was the same for Rogue One. Just because you know how a prequel will end doesn't make it not worth watching.
Yeah, I agree.
Interesting. That was an interesting take that he really appreciated that they, you know, a sort of sequence of events was laid out in The Thing,
yeah.
And then the filmmakers actually said, okay, stick to it. We're not going to change it.
Right. Know. And that's what I like about it, too. Mm-hmm. Of you're just sort of like, oh, so that's how that happened, and that's why the walls are covered in blood.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Floyd. I think Floyd's just really trying to tell us that he wants to come on the podcast, so I'm going to have to bring
come
him
on by.
Yeah, I'll have to reach out to him and find out really what he wants to come on and talk about, and we'll set something up. But I really appreciate him sending those in. If you have any thoughts on anything that we've talked about, or I guess I was going to say anything we're going to talk about, but how would you know? You can send those to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com, join our Facebook group. You can also tweet us at at Time Shifters Pod and at Movies at the Mat. I don't have any news stories. I thought I was going to have a news story. I thought I had a really timely news story because there was a story that came up talking about George A. Romero producing what he was going to have like a finishing film of his dead films.
Yeah.
And it was because he was unhappy with some of the stuff that was going, so he was going to put a definitive end to it, and it was going to be great. And yeah, it turns out it was an April Fool's prank.
We both fell for it.
We both fell for it. It wasn't until just sitting down to record, we were like pulling up the article to refresh ourselves, and oh, that wasn't real.
Yeah, it was well written. Because every time I hear Romero speak about something else with a zombie movie or zombie show, it's less than positive. He isn't completely slamming it. He usually just points out why he doesn't think it works, which is good. That's a fresh critique. I think that's a nice thing to hear, if, rather than just come out and say, oh, that's terrible. Mine's great. He doesn't do that. And the way this was written followed along with a lot of the things he said in the past. So I'm sitting there going, this sounds like Romero. And, yeah, I guess he would probably just try to end the genre on his own terms.
Exactly, yeah, because I think the article mentioned something about how he was, he's been outspoken against The Walking Dead on AMC.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but I wouldn't doubt it.
I've just now finished watching this past seasons of The Walking Dead. I had two episodes on the DVR. It is so strange that when this show first aired, for the first few seasons, as soon as it aired, I would watch it. The very next day, I mean, I was glued to this thing. I thought it was fantastic. Even when everyone else was like, oh, the season's so slow, I was like, oh, this is great. This is good story. You know, I was really into it. My friend Steve and I would have special podcast episodes just to talk about The Walking Dead, what's been going on in The Walking Dead. And now, that past season, I've had to, like, almost force myself to watch it.
Yeah, the past like three seasons, what, seven just finished?
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
I think somewhere around, I think it was season four when they, like halfway through season four, where they got forced out of the prison.
Yeah.
I think that's the moment for me where you could have ended the show. Because after that, they just started repeating the same thing. All right, we're back on the road. We run into someone. They want to kill us.
Yeah.
We win. We lose a couple of people.
I think it was about that time, too, where you started really realizing that the main cast shields were up.
Yeah.
But prior to that, you really didn't know who was going to make it out. Yeah. And it really started looking like, okay, yeah, well, they're not going to die because they're still in the credits.
Yeah. And then they started doing, like, fake-out deaths and, oh, look, we removed their name from the credits. Two episodes later, they're back.
Yeah. Who in the previews, who will die?
Right.
And it's some peripheral character that's only been on the show for five episodes.
Yeah, let's see. You've been there since season one. You've been there since season one. You showed up early in season two. You were introduced three episodes ago. You're the red shirt. You're dead.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so I think on our Facebook group, Floyd, again, actually, he posted that he watched the finale and he was done. He's done with it. And honestly, I think I might be too. It all seems so kind of cliched now.
Yeah.
And they did actually kill off a main character that had been with the show since the beginning of this season. Not in the finale, but I mean just in this season. Well, I don't think there's any spoilers now that, you know, they killed Glenn, and that was surprising. But honestly, his number should have been up probably years ago.
Well, as I read, somebody wrote about that. They said, you know, they should have killed Glenn not to start the season, but to end the last one. That way you're just sitting there in total shock, and then the episode cuts to black, and it's like, hey, you have that whole time between to process this. Rather, what they gave us was, all right, we get to think of every scenario of who's going to die. So by the time the episode aired, we've dealt with it.
Mm-hmm. I did like that in the premiere they kind of faked you out a little bit with initially killing – let's say a secondary character by killing
Abraham. Who was coming up. And like
who was kind of coming up in the ranks, and they killed him. And my first, like, oh, cop out. You
right.
know, oh, I couldn't believe it. Oh, they copped out. And then 5 minutes later, oh, sorry, never mind.
Glenn's dead.
I appreciated it. I kind of liked that fake out.
Yeah.
That they did.
But I don't know. It's just, it used to be so much more about, what does this world do to a person? I mean, the thing I really like, I think my favorite moment in the show or at least two moments, is in the second season where they find that kid and they have him in the barn and they're like, what do we do with him? Do we execute him? Do we let him go? Do we make him one of us? And they're all conflicted. That's a great moment. It's, you have to look at yourself and see, well, what do I let this world make me become? And then the other moment is the episode where they lose the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick is making that speech of, we can come back. We don't have to do this. We don't have to go to war with each other. You guys can come in here,
right,
and you can be one of us. And you've seen he's gone through that transformation of believing that you can be better. The governor ruins that plan. but since then, they've never dealt with those issues again. Instead, it's just sort of been kill them all.
Right.
And just fight.
Right. Yeah, I'm not as impressed with the stories that they've built up around the Saviors and Negan. I think Negan is an interesting character. He's a bit of a psychopath. I mean, he's got this sort of code of ethics, but that stops at, yeah, but I need order, so I'm going to bash your head in.
Right.
You know, this weird, no, I'm a good guy and I'm going to protect this person from being raped because that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And to do so I'm going to throw you in the fire. I'm going to beat your head in,
right,
to make an example. Like, whoa, he's got this weird twisted code of ethics. And I like that. I almost think, you know what? I'm done following Rick.
Yeah. Kill Rick. Let's follow Negan.
Yeah. Let's see his journey.
Sure.
Like I said, the last two episodes just sat on the DVR, and finally it was like, oh, gosh, you know, it's just one of those matters where the DVR, you start seeing that percentage starting to pile up.
Sure.
It's like, okay, I got, you know, these are mine, so I need to watch them or I need to delete them. So,
yeah, it becomes work. But once a show becomes work, it's time to stop.
Yeah, and I honestly think I will. I don't think I'm going to pick it up next season because a little bit just like you're saying, they shouldn't have killed Glenn at the end instead of at the beginning. It's like,
yeah.
Well, so they start the war at the end, and now we got to wait months before we see the war.
Right.
I was like, ugh. You know, we've been building up this entire season for this thing,
uh-huh,
and now we have to wait again.
Right.
I'm like, no, forget it. I don't care.
And it just lets you know what all of next season's going to be. How long is that going to drag on? What are you going to build up? And what am I going to have to wait for again?
Or is it again another weird thing where they build up the wolves? Was like a big buildup.
You can spoil whatever you
want.
Oh,
okay. I'm sorry.
I've only seen the first episode of this season because I was like, I just got to know who dies.
This was actually like last season, I think.
Oh, really?
Last season, I think.
Oh, them. Okay. Yeah.
The wolves. W's on there.
Yes. It didn't go anywhere.
The whole season and even the season before, even like maybe the last half, there's this hint of this dark force and the wolves. And then one attack, boom, they're dead, and that's it.
They're
like, whoa, wait a minute. What happened?
And that's what they did with Terminus. It was like, get to Terminus.
Two episodes done. We're leaving Terminus.
What happened with that? That would have been interesting. It's like you teased it constantly, and then you spend half a season marching there, and then it's over.
Yeah. But the whole buildup they did this season with, they did the buildup with trying to unite all the different groups and to fight the Saviors. And it's like, well, you know that's going to happen.
Right.
You know eventually everyone's going to come together and they're going
to
fight and our heroes are going to win. And I honestly would like to see it, a big fight and our heroes all die and that's the end of the series.
Yeah.
That would impress me.
Sure.
You know, but that's not what's going to happen.
Be a very brave ending.
It would be a fantastic, very brave ending.
And I think part of the problem is the fact that the comic book is still going on.
Yes.
They have still tons of material to pull from. It's not like Game of Thrones where they've caught up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot left in front of them. And I've heard the producers say, like, we're going to try to go for another 10 years if we can.
Yeah.
Like, could you not do that?
Really? I know that they've dip back and forth between sticking to the comics and going on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and the one of the most popular character, Daryl, was never in the comics, as I understand it.
Yeah,
he was created for the series, and he's become one of the most, you know, the kind of like the breakout role.
Sure.
And you know, they've made a lot of changes. So every now and again, they'll go back and they'll
pull the comic,
and then they'll go on their own. And that's kind of neat. That's a neat way of doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, I think they could end the show however they wanted. And like I said, like a real brave ending of just, and they're all dead and Negan rules the world. And that's fine. That would be the way the series ends. And
yeah,
the comic can go and do whatever it wants.
How I would end it is something like that, where like everyone's dead, but Carl is still alive. And you see Carl, he's still wearing the hat, and he has Daryl's crossbow, and he's got Michonne's sword, and he's got his dad's gun, and he's becomes like this lone wanderer helping people. And when people, like, he shows up, like, people are trapped somewhere, and they're like, who are you? And he's like, I'm the law. And he's taken from all of these people, and he's become the ultimate zombie-fighting warrior.
Turns into the superhero of the universe.
Yes, yeah. And he becomes this myth across the wasteland of zombie world.
I think that would be interesting, or to see one of the characters that has maybe fought hardest against kind of diving into the animal nature. And in the final episodes or whatever, it turns out he's on top. Who are we? like the Negan thing. You know, we're Negan.
Yes.
What's the one guy that with the stick? I can't think of the character's
name.
Morgan. Morgan. Yeah. How would you like that? Where he was fighting so long to go against everything, and then in the end he'd be like, "We're Morgan." That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I'll leave it on the DVR and I'll watch the premiere and see what happens, but I'm guessing the premiere will probably be slow as snot. They'd like to do that where it'll just be another build up, quote unquote,
sure,
episode. I have a feeling the next season is going to be a chore for me again.
And their ratings are dropping, so they're kind of in trouble a little bit.
Well, maybe probably for a lot of the same reasons that we're describing here.
Yeah.
Everyone's just a little tired of the same old thing. Same old thing. Yeah, I've seen one, you know, zombie apocalypse show. You've seen them all, you know.
Right.
Well, with that, I think that's a perfect way to segue into taking a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to discuss 1978 and 2004's Dawn of the Dead.
White Zombie, a new novelization of the classic horror movie from award-winning author Stephen D. Sullivan. Available now in print and all ebook formats. Find it on Amazon, Smashwords, DriveThruFiction, and other quality outlets. Also available in a special edition, including the complete movie script. Grab White Zombie before it grabs you. Details at sdsullivan.com.
All right, and we are back, and I just remembered I sent a disc home with you, Matt, because you mentioned in the last podcast that you had never watched Forbidden Planet, and I'm dying to find out what you thought of it.
I never even heard of it.
Yeah, that kind of blew me away. So now I'm really, yeah.
I mean, I had heard of Robbie the Robot, but I never looked into where that character came from. This was a really fun movie. It was very creative, very clever. It took its time to explain the sci-fi science behind it without making it boring. What was that one character's name? Dr. Morbius, when he's like giving them the tour, I'm sitting there going, cool!
That is some of the incredible little bit of camera trickery.
Yeah, showing how big it is. And I just kept going, this is from 56, right?
Yeah.
They must have just done a lot. And that one overhead shot where you're looking down this enormous shaft they look like ants going across this huge walkway.
Groundbreaking camera trickery with matte painting and animation and a miniature, and just blended it all together.
It looked wonderful, and even though you told me, and even though I knew, I forgot that it was Leslie Nielsen until they gave one really good close-up of his face, and I was like, oh, right! He's in this! and then I'm mostly through it, and my wife comes home, and I pause. I go, do you know who that is? That's familiar. Where have I seen him? Is that Leslie Nielsen? It's like, yep, before he went a little crazy. I saw the ending coming, but it still was good. It was like, okay, because I kept thinking like, oh, he's doing it, right? He's like dream attacking everyone. Because when they said, you know, he's the only person who survived being on the planet, I'm like, well, either you killed them or you did something to kill them that you're unaware of. And when it started getting into his brain got, you know, and his intelligence got enhanced, and You know, the monster always seems to show up when he's not there. I'm like, he's attached to this thing somehow.
Yeah, sure.
And that scene where you see him sleeping, I'm like, oh, he's doing it in his sleep. And there's other movies that have done that. There was some movie late 90s, early 2000s called The Sphere. I don't know if
sure.
you ever saw that. They do like the exact same thing where you go into the sphere and you become more intelligent, and Samuel
yes.
Jackson's character dreams all of the horrible things that kills off everybody. So, you know, it's one of those concepts that will repeat every few decades or
mm-hmm.
so. But yeah, this one was a lot of fun, and Robbie's funny. Would you like 60 gallons of whiskey? Yes.
Yeah, it's a fun film. It is still a product of its time in some
yeah.
ways. It is very 50s, certainly the way that some of the people are treated, and you know, the how the women are treated, things like that. You got the corny sort of the cook chef that's you know, also the drunk, and
right.
you know, he's just kind of a goofball. It's like, how did you make it into service?
Right.
That kind of stuff, but it is, I think, very inventive. Just the animation, the special effects is, I think, astonishing for
mm-hmm.
1951. It's
yeah.
just, there's a reason.
56,
excuse
yeah.
me. There's a reason it kind of holds a, that's why it just kind of blew me away that you hadn't even heard of it.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you're under a rock.
Yeah, I guess so. There's lots of, Leslie Nielsen, of course, Robbie the Robot, which was became a breakout star on his own.
Yeah.
He makes appearances in movies and television for years later.
Right.
There was the radio operator. I don't know if you ever watched the old Bionic Man series.
Mm-mm.
Nah, okay. He goes on to be Oscar Goldman, the guy that runs the organization that the Bionic Man works for. So
okay.
he becomes a sci-fi staple.
Nice.
I think it's incredibly well acted. I love it when you take a story like that, and it's something I appreciate really in a lot of the 50s, is it can be a ridiculous story, a ridiculous plot, but no one plays it that way.
No.
It's just as important to them as if they were doing, well, I was going to say it was doing Shakespeare, but this is kind of Shakespeare.
Yeah, very much so.
So I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. All right, we didn't come here to talk about Forbidden Planet, so we'll cut that shorter. We could probably, you know, go on for a while. I'd have to watch it again, just refresh. But it's been a few years since I've watched it. But we came to talk about Dawn of the Dead.
Yes.
We'll start talking. I don't know if you want to try to approach these really kind of one at a time and then do a little bit of a compare and contrast. Or maybe just start with the 78.
Sure.
And then as we get into the 2004, I think the compare and contrast will kind of just play into that.
Mm-hmm.
So 1978, you hadn't seen the original 78
no.
film. This is the one that I had seen, but it'd been probably 20 years since I've seen it, so it was fun to go back and watch it. What did you think of the original?
So I had seen the remake first.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been like my first dive into like the zombie movie. I don't know. I know I eventually saw Night of the Living Dead. I can't remember which I saw first now. So I liked Romero. So seeing this and enjoying the remake, I really liked it, and I liked it more. Doesn't ruin the remake for me, but yeah, I liked it a lot more, probably because of the smaller cast.
Yeah.
It was interesting in that, you know, it starts, and this has already happened. Like, the zombies are kind of everywhere already. And
well, this
see
is a really great, like, it's played out, even though it's 10 years after the 68 Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
It plays out as a direct sequel.
Yeah.
So you really can just take the events of Night of the Living Dead and just fast forward them 10 years and
right.
say that just happened.
They lost control.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Because I don't know if his movies are supposed to be looked at as connected, but you feel like they could be. And this is definitely one of those, yeah, because it just opened and there's just total panic inside the newsroom. You know, no one, like, professionalism has gone out the window. Everyone's
yeah.
yelling at the expert that they brought in. It's
on
like,
air.
Right, live on air from behind the camera. They're shouting at him and he's like, no, this is what we have to do. Like, I almost thought someone was going to throw something at him. So it was just really interesting to see. And it's just like, yeah, we would have those breakdowns because people are being eaten alive
mm-hmm.
right outside. And just to see those moments of, you know, raiding the building because martial law has taken over and people aren't allowed to stay home anymore. And I wasn't sure where they were going with it when they had that racist cop. I'm like, well, what is he doing? He's the real monster. He's kicking in doors and he's shooting innocent people. He's using all kinds of racial
slurs. Yeah, he snapped.
Slurs.
He's gone. Yeah.
But it's like, is this who he was? Was he always like this? And now he's like, well, that can't stop me now because the world's ending.
I think that was it. I think this was, he finally had an excuse to just let loose and do everything he's always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And this now, who's going to stop him? Why? You know, it's all out the window. Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, okay, who's going to be the main character in this? Is it going to be crazy racist cop? Is it going to be the rookie? Or is it going to be the guy with his head on his shoulders?
Would have been interesting if it was the crazy racist cop.
Right.
Yeah. Could have easily been, actually. I mean, you could have actually twisted this and whole other story.
Exactly.
That would have been interesting,
Especially with who they team up with.
Yeah, no kidding.
But yeah, it ends up being the guy with the head on his shoulders, and he stops the racist cop, and that scene where I wish it would have picked up a little bit. I was like, when do we get to the mall? I have the right movie, don't I? It could have moved forward a little bit, but the part that I really liked was when they find all of the zombies like in the basement and they have to take them all out, and it's not easy for them. Like, you can see with each pull of the trigger, they're feeling a little bit more sick to their stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really good scene. And then that door opens. You guys got it down here?
Yeah. Everything all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this was – what I like about this film, you know, 78, it was – 1968 was the first film that had the, you know, the flesh-eating, cannibalistic zombie idea. And I don't think – I was trying to see if what films maybe between 68 and 78 picked up on it. And I'm sure there were. I don't know, maybe not in the U.S., but certainly overseas
that
might have picked up. But this was still early enough that – when you see the zombies and you know, these are people, they still play on the fact that these were once people.
Yeah.
These were your parents, sisters, brothers, coworkers. I think that's been lost a little bit in a lot of the modern films. And even in the, like, we were just talking, The Walking Dead, they're just things.
Right.
And they can be put down.
Yeah.
And there's no real thought or remorse about who these people were. And in this film, with the cops, all these people, you know, they came down here to, you know, I think they said this is where they thought they were just dumping bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they still realize that these were once people, and they have to shoot. They're shooting people. They're people that will kill them if they don't.
Right.
But they have to shoot people. And that really plays into that scene just by the look on those cops' faces, the slight hesitation they have right before they pull the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And these are, you know, elderly, these are children, you know, it's not easy for him, and it's a powerful scene, and it's played really well.
And there's even that moment where I think it's, because it's the scene with Peter and Roger, and there's a moment where one of them has to reload his gun, and he doesn't move, and he knows the one zombie's crawling towards him, and I'm sitting there going, like, does he want it to take him out? Does he feel so guilty in this moment that he's just sort of like, if it gets me, it gets me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, he can step back.
That's the feeling I got.
Yeah. That he's just sort of like, I kind of deserve this, and he doesn't stand up for himself. And then the other, I think it's Peter who's doing the firing first, and then Roger steps in and helps him out.
Yeah, I think that is, that it kind of helps build the reasoning for Peter for doing what he ends up doing, which is, you know, he abandons the force.
Yeah.
And to just go ahead and skip ahead a little bit, he talks with Roger and he tells him, like, should I stay?
Right.
Should I just go? Why should I stay? And I think that's where that comes from.
Sure.
That helps kind of give him that little bit of backstory to give him a reason for saying, okay, screw my job, I'm out of here.
Yeah. And it bonds them pretty quickly, and you can see how that bond grows, and they just enjoy each other's company, and they become good friends immediately. And it's from that moment.
So they end up, I guess it was Peter whose friend is the...
Roger's friend.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Peter was the other cop. Roger.
Yes.
Roger is a friend with... Was he a friend of Francine's? Or
he's
was
a
he
friend
a friend
of
with Stevens?
Okay. He's a friend of Stevens, and then Steven is dating Francine.
Okay, gotcha.
And they work together at the news station, which I thought was clever. Like, we can steal the news chopper.
Which is how they escaped. So the four of them escape. And they're trying to fly anywhere, somewhere, try to find someplace safe.
They don't
safe.
Have a plan, which I thought was kind of interesting. Because when they got in that helicopter, I thought, like, they have somewhere to go, right? Like,
no,
we're just going to fly.
Hope to see lights.
Yeah. They're just going to go until things don't look as bad. And they realize it's bad everywhere.
Mm-hmm. They make a stop at an airfield to fuel up the helicopter, mm-hmm. which is that's another one of those scenes that's really good because you end up having the children... Yeah. Zombies attack, and the poor I keep getting his name
Peter.
Wrong. Peter has to gun them down, and mm-hmm. you know, this is killing these people.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really breaking them up. These are kids.
Yeah, he's almost trying not to do it, and he throws them. He throws them again, and then he's just like, I gotta put them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it ends up being a really good scene, and then they keep flying, and they realize that they have to land somewhere because Steven's fallen asleep at the stick.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing in a helicopter. And they happen across a giant shopping mall.
Right.
Now, and keep in mind that this is something that maybe people don't realize. In 1978, the giant shopping mall, still a relatively new phenomenon.
Yeah. There's even that moment where Peter's like, what is that?
Yeah. They don't know what. Yeah, exactly. It's definitely not something that's just now. It's just ambiguous. It's a mall.
Right.
Every
10 miles, you see a mall.
Yeah. That was kind of a new thing even in 78.
Yeah.
So that was important to this particular story, to this film.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, it has a helipad. I don't know how many malls have helipads on it. That's convenient.
Flat enough space on the roof.
Well, it actually had a helipad. It was a concrete with an H. It was an official landing helipad. So, like, I don't know how many shopping malls had
those. That's how you get Santa there.
Exactly. And they land there they think, okay, well, this is as good a place as any to land. We can try to get some sleep, and maybe we can get some supplies. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the whole reason they stop there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they realize once they're there, wait a minute, we've got food, we've got clothes, we've got shelter.
And
we've got power, and because it's the 70s, we've got guns and ammunition.
Right. A whole giant store.
In the 70s, you go to the mall, get something at JCPenney's, and stop over and get a .38 Magnum.
And then hit the food court.
And hit the food court with your newly purchased automatic weapon.
Yes, right.
A semi-automatic weapon. It was the 70s. And that's so they decide that they'll make this kind of their home. And as it turns out, Francine's pregnant, so they really can't be running around. That they got to figure out something to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
So they decide to hole up and kind of fortify it as much as they can. And within that, commented before that you think Romero kind of writes a story, kind of figures out something about society that he wants to tell a story about. And then says, oh, yeah, and there's zombies.
Yeah, he does. He comes up with really good social commentary, and zombies are the excuse to tell it.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, it is about what was considered kind of the rampant consumerism of the late 70s. Like I said, the mall was something new,
mm-hmm.
fairly new, and it was seen as kind of starting to bring down America kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of commentary, like, why are they trying to get in here? It's good. Because when they were alive, this is where they wanted to be.
Yeah.
This is just them. I love, you know, they have lots of great shots of the zombies just sort of shuffling, doing the mall walking.
Right.
You know, and that's not just because they're zombies shuffling. They're in the mall.
Yeah. And Romero has this really good thing with zombies that other people don't really do of they're still a part of your personality for each.
Yes.
So each zombie is unique. So they're not just shuffling through the mall. They're, like, looking at the stuff. Well, you know, they're picking things up. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily know how to use it. But because, you know, you were so-and-so, you went to this store. And because you were another person, you went to that store. It wasn't aimless walking. It was, like, basic primal instinct mixed with your consumerism personality.
Yeah, it's like they still had memories, but memories they didn't really know what to do with.
Yeah.
For some reason, something connected to them. But they didn't know why, but they just wanted to react with it because there was just something.
Which plays later to the ending.
Yes.
Which, because I remember thinking that, and I'm like, uh-oh, he knows where the wall is.
Yeah, that's something I had forgotten about in this film, is that they play up that, you know, that there's still something about, or Romero zombies in particular, because I think it continues on with Day of the Dead as well, that there is still, I don't want to say it intelligence, but
right.
maybe that is the best word to use. There's still something inside that husk.
Right.
And that is something that's definitely lost in a lot of, certainly like in Walking Dead and a lot of other mm-hmm. modern, quote unquote, zombie films.
Right.
They're just mindless, you know, eating machines. Yeah, and everything.
They all become the same.
Exactly. So I thought that was really interesting, and the fact that you could have something. You know what? I take it back. They try to sort of play on that every once in a while in The Walking Dead early on.
Yeah, they did that.
With the Morgan's wife who kept coming to the door.
Right. And it's like, well, was she doing it out of instinct, or was she just following the noises or the light? And then they did it with that guy who was like the governor's assistant, where he was trying to like do the test of like, do you remember your favorite song? Do you remember
right.
your wife? And it turns out, nope.
No.
Yeah. They put that to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, that ended pretty quickly. But anyway, back the Romero stuff, I appreciate that because I think that makes those zombies more frightening.
Yeah.
And it adds to that whole, these were once people. These were people
yeah.
we knew. And it's going to hurt us to have to put them down.
Right.
Because they remind us of, not only do they look like grandma,
mm-hmm.
but she's sitting in her favorite chair holding her knitting.
Yeah,
know, maybe
exactly.
trying to knit, not actually knitting, but still doing something yeah. with the needles or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it throws in that gray area of like, well, maybe we can turn them back.
Yeah.
You know, if I just lock them away, we can solve this. Like, well, that's how we're all going to die. And, you know, so for other things, it makes it easier to just kill them. And this, you really struggle with it
mm-hmm.
more than anything else. And that's all Romero thinking, I'm going to make this difficult.
Now, one of the ways that they plan on fortifying the mall, they decide they're going to block the doors. They see there's a shipping company across the parking way or so. So they're going to use the trucks, and they're going to block the doors. Now, unfortunately, in the process, Roger, who can be a little bit of a show-off and a goofball, ends up getting himself bit.
Which I thought was weird because everything leading up to it, he was probably the most level-headed.
Hmm.
Because you see him just before that raid on the apartment calming the rookie down. You see him be the one take out the racist cop. And you see him back up Peter when Peter needed help. And then all of a sudden he's this yippee-ki-yay cowboy shouting at the top of his lungs. And I'm just like, well, he's lost it. Like everything yeah. that's gone on. This isn't a personality. This is a man breaking. And he's you know, risking death because he's almost died a few dozen times already.
Yeah. And, you know, he almost gets taken out. And Peter has to, like, is the one who's like, look, focus. You've
right.
got to focus. We've got to do this. You've got to focus. Yeah, yeah, I will. No problem. I've got it. Then he gets bitten.
Yeah.
And then the very next scene.
He pushes yeah. it a little too far.
Exactly.
And the bites, the way they film those bites, like, I don't know what the material is that they bite into, but you just see these big chunks come out. And
it's a little gruesome.
The bright red, orangey kind of blood. It's yeah. just, oh, every time I saw it, I was like, oh, God. Even though it's 78, I was just like, that is horrible.
I thought that, you know, some of the makeup was really good. Tom Savini did the makeup and the effects. I overall, I think it was effective, but I think there were also those times where it was a little dated. You could tell
sure.
that, you know, the bits that they were pulling, they're biting off, is like, it just looked like someone biting in the plasticine or
sure.
you know, but it still had that sort of visceral.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this may have been, I mean, certainly I was thinking back into the 68, you didn't really see a lot of like live bites.
No.
You saw things eating what looked like flesh off of,
like a big meat bone.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Like from the butcher, which I think they did in the original
yes.
one. They just went to a local butcher.
So, like I said, I'm sure maybe over in like some of the Italian horror films and everything, maybe they had done something like this. But in the U.S., I'm going to go ahead and go on the limb and say this is probably one of the first times we saw something like this.
Sounds right.
And I think it was really effective.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that, yes, the blood looks odd, and some of the flesh that they're biting off looks a little too easy to bite off.
Sure,
it
yeah.
makes us look like we're made out of marshmallows
right.
sometimes. But no, it was really good. It does. It can be a little disturbing. The bites
yeah.
were pretty good. Some were better than others. You know.
Yeah. And then later, See, I keep messing up their names. Later, yeah. When Roger, after he's been bandaged up, and he's trying to jumpstart the car in the mall.
Ooh, the thumb.
Yeah, when the one zombie just looks right at his wound and his bandage, and she grabs it, and it pops.
Yeah, it just blood spurts. That one hurt.
Yeah,
that one didn't.
I cringed. I went, oh, no. Like, that's not how that would happen, but just the way they shot it, I believed it, mm-hmm. and I got it. I was like, oh, that was a lot.
Yeah. That was probably one of the most simplest but most effective, because you know it was just a blood pack under the bandage, you know.
And you see her look at it and his legs out, and it's like it's almost like a Looney Tunes moment of he turns into the big like steak. Yeah. And I'm just thinking like, move your leg, pop. Oh.
At this point though, they know that if you've been bitten, you're gonna turn. Yeah. You're gonna die and you're gonna turn into one of these things. So they know this guy is. There's nothing they can do for him.
Right.
It's only a matter of time. But I love the fact that as long as he is able, he's going to help.
Yeah.
I love the scene where they just got him propped in like the wagon.
Yeah.
And they're running through the mall, and he's got the gun.
Uh-huh.
He's just popping as they're
and
rolling
I wasn't
through.
Expecting any of that. I was like, oh, they're just going to leave him in the room to rot. Like, no, he's still one of us. Like this, mm-hmm. they really took their time to show the emotional side of this. This is still – he's one of us. He helped get us here. He – you know, we love this guy. He's still part of the team, and he's still going to contribute. I almost would have liked to show them, like, walking him down the stairs, like someone's got to carry him,
mm-hmm.
and there probably would have had to have been like this very like gentle moment that would have been kind of cool,
yeah,
to see,
sure.
Of like, well, you know, if Roger just being, well, just leave me upstairs, like, no man, you're coming with us, and he helps, and it was a really cool moment.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think the best makeup, and it's one of the scenes that's even from the beginning when I saw this originally, and that's one of the scenes that's always stuck with me. The makeup they do on him after he's turned. He has died. He's under the sheet, and they're just waiting. They're not going to do anything until it happens, because up to that point, he's their friend.
Yeah.
And it's not until after he turns that he's something that needs to be put down.
Right.
And he lifts up from that sheet, and sure, you know, he probably shouldn't be as emaciated or whatever as he is, but the makeup on his face when he comes up is
right.
So good. Mm-hmm. I love the makeup in that scene.
Yeah. He just looks like a skeleton / zombie.
Yeah, with just skin stretched over it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I like how Peter doesn't shoot right away.
Mm-hmm.
He's just sort of... He's hesitating. He's like,
and you don't see it either.
No,
you don't see the shot. You
yeah.
hear it from the other room. It was really good.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, up to that point, most of the dead, Walking Dead that we see are just people with, you know, pale makeup.
Yep.
On, you know, they mm-hmm. don't see a lot. Maybe some scrapes, a little bit of blood here
yeah.
and there, or something like that. He was the first one that was like, oh, that's a zombie.
Yes.
I mean, that's the Romero zombie mm-hmm. right there. That was so good.
Yeah.
It was very effective, and it was they picked the perfect moment to use that detail
mm-hmm.
of makeup, I think.
So going with some behind the scenes of makeup, dovetailing off of that, do you know who did the music? Did you notice? I saw his name in the credits, and I went,
yes,
I looked it up.
I noticed the name, and now I'm...
It's Dario Argento.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, he worked on music?
Didn't he actually produce this?
I didn't notice that part. If he did, let me know. But I saw, I was like, music by Dario Argento. I went, the director? And then I looked it up, and yeah.
Claudio Argento was one of the producers.
Okay.
That was of the Argento family. Then.
Yeah. And I was, and so I looked it up. He did music on this and Suspiria, and that was it. I was like, okay, I guess he had a hobby. And then I found out that him and Romero co-directed a movie later. It's like, I guess they became friends. This is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Two really good horror,
mm-hmm.
kind of gory directors that teamed up. So I want to see that movie.
Yeah. You know, what I like about this film is while it is gory, I don't consider it necessarily gore for gore's sake.
No.
I mean,
plays.
It's used where it's used very effectively.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, oh, and we can do this and we can do that. It's like,
right.
no, why would we do that?
Right.
Yeah.
But most of the movie is standing around talking,
mm-hmm.
and then they use it. They use the suspense and the fear of getting caught mostly, and then only a few times is it gory, just to really stamp forward. this was dangerous and mm-hmm. you screwed up.
Yeah. No, it's a really good, and I think it's, you know, one of those films where if you go back to the 60s and the 70s where the zombie film isn't just about the zombies, and that's what I appreciate.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a story behind it. It's a story about people and their zombies. Mm-hmm. The film isn't made just so you can have an excuse to have somebody eat somebody.
Right.
Which is something we'll talk about, I think, here in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's a remarkable film. It actually makes me want to go back and then watch the sequel to the third film, Day of the Dead. If I'm not mistaken, that's the one where they are... the military and the scientists are in like an old mine or an underground, and they actually, and then I think, what's his name? Bob the Zombie or something like that?
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Okay. It's been a long time since I've seen it. But just like we were saying, there was, you know, there's something still, some sort of intelligence inside the zombie. Well, they've got a zombie that they've actually sort of trained to like help out around the lab kind of thing.
Yeah, that can go wrong or not. Sure. We'll see how that plays.
I'm sure that it's been a while since I've seen it, but I'm sure it's all perfectly fine.
It's a pleasant movie, just about a zombie sweeping up the lab.
The actors in this, like you said, it was a very tight cast.
Yeah.
It was only effectively four people.
Four, yeah.
Of your main cast. The one guy that played Steven, David MG, he was one of these actors where I'm like, oh, I've seen him in stuff later. No, I haven't. He only did like three or four films total.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've not seen any of his other films, but he seemed so familiar to me. It was really weird.
Maybe he just has one of those faces.
He does apparently have just one of those
he
faces.
He looks a little like Hugh Laurie.
Hmm.
To me.
I can see that.
Yeah. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Ken Forsey, when I was watching the movie, I was like, I've seen you in something. What have I seen you in? He has a cameo in the 2004 remake.
Yes, he does. Yes.
A couple of them do. Mm-hmm. The guy who played Roger did, and then the guy who led the gang has a cameo, which I thought was...
That's Tom Savini, actually. He's the one that did the makeup and everything.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Very cool. Yes. So he just decided to pop in and play the jerk.
Yeah.
But the other thing, I was looking at him, because it was his voice that I recognized first, and then when I went back to the 2004 one and saw him older, I was like, wait, you mean you're older and you look different, and you look familiar to me still. I grew up watching this show. He played the dad on the Nickelodeon show Kenan and Kel.
Who's this? Which one was this?
This was Ken Forsey.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. And I was just like, you played, like, the dad was, like, neurotic and over the top. Like, it was just this kid's sitcom show that
right.
I grew up watching. And I was like, you were the crazy dad on Kenan and Kel. That's crazy.
I last saw you blowing away zombies.
Right. It's like, I went from when I was 12 watching you on that, now you're shooting zombies' heads off. Whoa.
Yeah, we didn't go into a lot of it. Of course, the mall has to be protected from a biker gang.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, a lot of this is, I keep falling back to Walking Dead, to the good Walking Dead, I guess. and a lot of it, the Walking Dead really, I think, has its roots in this film.
Yeah.
The idea of finding a safe place and then having to defend it, not just against the dead, but against the living as well.
I think every zombie movie now can't get away from this concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's so simple, because it's funny when you think about it of like, oh, it's a zombie movie. Do they all, you know, like hold up in a mall somewhere? But this started that.
Mm-hmm.
I know you could argue Night of the Living Dead did with the house, but the house was the only thing around, whereas
right.
they chose the mall. And now everyone chooses the mall or some kind of large structure that has a lot of useful stuff in it.
Because mm-hmm.
even The Walking Dead, the prison, is very practical.
Oh, yeah.
Big, thick, heavy walls, armor, weapons.
It's not hard to defend because it's built to be...
To keep you out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a simple concept, and thank you, George Romero, for inventing it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, unless there's anything else you want to talk about this one, I think we could probably go ahead and get into the 2004 remake.
Yeah.
2004 remake. Let me dial up the info on that one. Now, this one of the things that I noticed, you can't help but notice right away, is where it looks like it's going to start out with an equally tight cast, it quickly balloons into a very large cast.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the detractions from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You could have kept it to that smaller group and not brought in another half dozen people. Because that first group, was it Anne? Where she meets them, the first time I saw it, I was like, here's your cast. And then the truck shows up with all those other people. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. More people to
Anna. In 2004, Anna. It's Anna, Kenneth, and Andre, and Michael, I think, are the four main. That's the top build cast. Would be Sarah Pauly, Ving Rhames, Micah Pfeiffer, and Jake Weber are the top build cast for the 2004 film.
Yeah. They probably should have kept it to that smaller group. I understand the other things that they were trying to do with the larger group, but it didn't have to go that way. The other thing that's interesting is this was the debut directorial movie for Zack Snyder.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I noticed that.
Which I thought was interesting. It's like somebody's like, all right, we're going to give you a shot with a remake. Okay.
Why not? Sure.
But no, I do like it. It's fun. And it goes, you know, I don't think it's better. I like the original one now that I've seen them both. But Snyder did what I think should be done when you remake something is you change something. And he made a small change that had a huge impact. And the movie that came out a year before, 28 Days Later, did it first. But with how long it takes to make a movie, it probably wasn't that he saw that and then did it. He was probably working on it while that one was finishing up. Zombies Can Run.
Yeah.
And that's a huge change. And now zombies always run. Like, even in The Walking Dead, there's still some running zombies there.
Yes, absolutely.
They're not sprinting like they are in this movie, mm-hmm. but they pick up their feet a little bit. And, yeah, I think it was that one changed everything, because you can't just run away from them. They're going to catch up to you. And it doesn't seem like they get tired, but you do.
Right.
So you have to not just get away from them. You have to continually get away from them.
Oh, it definitely adds to the fright factor of the zombie. And I think that's one of the reasons, it's something I think I read that Zack Snyder, you know, they purposely did, because they didn't want to take the chance of being having like these almost being laughable of the shuffling zombies.
Yeah.
Because I think that only works. I think the shuffling zombies work if there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Whereas you only need one or two, if they can run and mm-hmm. almost, you know, superhuman speed, then that makes them more of a threat.
Yeah, and they even say that in the 78 one, where they're like, is it clear? Yeah, there's only a few of them. We can handle it.
Right. We can just run around. It's fine. Right. No problem.
Yeah, and they don't kill a lot of them until it's time to clear out the mall. They just mm-hmm. keep moving, and the zombies can't keep up. Whereas in this one, you would be dead within minutes.
Right. In the beginning, we get a little bit more of a...
Day one.
It's not something that's been happening. It's something that happens, you know, like overnight kind of thing. It happens elsewhere. We don't know why. We still don't get an explanation as to why or anything, which I actually like. That's one of the things I like about these Romero, these zombie type films. It's just happening. We don't know why.
Right. Go with it.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Pauly plays Anna, who wakes up and. Trying to remember, how does her her boyfriend gets killed? Oh, does one attack the house?
Yeah, well, it's the
next door neighbor comes
the little
into the
girl,
house. Mm-hmm.
And they think she's been hurt. They have no idea what's gone on.
Right.
They slept, like, what's interesting is she's like an ER nurse,
mm-hmm.
and she's just finishing her shift, which is exhausting.
Right.
And there's
her
like,
shift and then some, if I remember right. She was supposed to go home like 2 hours ago. Right?
Which is actually very normal for nurses.
Yes.
And I shout out to all of the nurses.
Yes,
I love
absolutely.
You all. And there's like this kind of clever moment where someone's just like, oh, did you see that one guy came in? He had like, it looked like someone bit him or something. And you're just sort of like, there's patient zero.
Yeah.
And then she has somebody else do it. So you see she's just missing it over mm-hmm. and over. Like, she gets home. Like, she turns off her radio about, like there's a warning. And then, like, there's a news report. But she's, you know, she's having sex with her. I don't know if it's her boyfriend or her husband. And then, like, the TV goes off. But they're in the middle of what they're doing.
Right.
And so they wake up. And they have no idea the world went to hell mm-hmm. while they were sleeping. And yeah, the little girl comes in. And I thought that was a really clever opening.
Yeah.
I really like that opening.
No, I think it was just as an effective opening as there's
chaos.
Yeah, just the chaos. And yeah, she is completely baffled. She has no idea. That's one of the things. That's another big difference between this film and the original is our main female lead has no idea. I mean, she literally wakes up to this and has no idea what's going on. There's just people attacking people all over. There's emergency vehicles. There's cars careening through the street.
Yeah.
You know.
Her next door neighbor's pointing a gun at her.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the next door neighbor's daughter just ate her husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
Her husband just tried to eat her.
Yes. And it's that good moment of when, you know, the neighbor's pointing the gun at her. The ambulance flies through the street, takes him out. And that's when she realizes the city's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
The whole city. And she doesn't know what to do. And I like that shot of she's driving away and it's that really high up shot.
Yes.
And you see one car like just miss her. And it's just as it's just panning and panning. And it's getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just taking off. And then she gets in the car accident. I'm like, this is a great open. I think that's what made me really like the movie. Great opening and a lot of okay.
Yeah.
After that.
She ends up meeting up with some other people. And this is one of the things I didn't care for this particular film is they meet up, she meets up with someone else and then they meet up with another couple and they're like, oh, and we're going to the mall.
Yeah.
And that's how we get to the mall.
Mm-hmm. That was the plan.
Okay. I just don't, especially now in the 90s, you know, the mall is not quite the oasis of everything you're ever going to need as it might have been in the 70s.
Yeah.
So I question whether that's not the first place I would think of is to go for safety, I guess. So I think it was kind of one of these things like, well, we're remaking it, so we have to go to the mall.
Sure.
And they're like, okay. But it just, in the first film, it was, we have to land somewhere. This is as good as any. And then it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Right.
Yeah. This one, it was like, no, best place to go, the mall. All right. Why not?
What are you going to do in the bookstore? Yeah. What's there that's going to help you?
I mean, I guess there is food court, so I guess maybe they're thinking there would be. But it's just,
food,
if you're
yeah.
trying to stay safe or something like that, I would think you would hold up in someone's basement or something.
Sure.
Or, you know.
And keep moving.
Keep moving. Yeah. I don't know if I would think I'm going to go to the mall.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. That makes sense. I think the reason I kept watching this movie and enjoyed it so much, though, was Ving Rhames.
Yeah.
He is my favorite character in this movie.
He has a presence in the film.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, not a lot of like lines. I mean, he is very much just
his face.
A presence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I remember
he was a good choice for to replace the
Ken Forsey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that big badass cop who's just got the shotgun and he knows what he's doing and he's going to make sure you don't get him killed.
Right.
But I read something that said he heard about the movie and he sought them out and he was like, "Put me in this."
Right.
So, yeah, and you could tell he wanted to be there and he was having a good time with it. And he did a lot with that character with like you said, very little lines. It was all in his face.
I don't think some of the rest of the cast was as strong. And
no.
Maybe it was, and even our main, you know, female lead here, Sarah Polley, she was not strong enough to carry the role. There were times where I really felt like she just learned that line, you know, kind of thing.
Especially since this movie was also trying to play to, we have our main characters, and then we have our secondary characters. And in the other one, there were no, it was just the four.
Right.
No one was the star.
Mm-hmm.
The event was the star. The mall was the star.
Right.
But yeah, you wouldn't say, well, that's the leader. But in this one, you would totally say Ving Rhames was the leader, and Sarah Polley was your main character. And so I think that changes the whole dynamic of what you're watching.
And then when you throw in, you know, they get, you mentioned that, you know, they're in the mall, they've got the mall, but then a truck comes careening through and turns out it's a truck of effectively refugees, people trying to escape the zombie apocalypse, and they let them in. And well, among these are like some of like a character actors, frankly, that you see in like television and movies for the next 30 years.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of brings it down a little bit for me, mainly because I know who these people are going to be. They may have not have been yet.
Yeah,
or,
they weren't.
Or maybe
they
were.
Yet.
Well, like Matt Fuhrer, I mean, he'd been Max Headroom already. So it's like, what's he doing here?
Right. And then you have Ty Burrell. You've got mm-hmm. Michael Kelly as the mall guard before he became famous. But those were the characters that I got into. Those were the ones where I wanted to know more about. And it makes sense because those end up being some really good actors. Yeah. And your main cast, aside from Vin Rains, is a little lacking.
The one advantage of having a larger cast is you could actually tell more stories. And maybe I both like it and think it kind of hurt the film at the same time because I felt it got a little too spread out of mm-hmm. all the stories that you were trying to tell. You had the one couple that had the pregnant woman,
yep.
and she's very pregnant in right. this. And, of course, she ends up getting a scratch from yeah. one of these walkers. He's dead. And, she ends up – I don't think we have to worry about – we've never worried about spoiling, so
no.
I guess, it's been 12 years, 13 years since this film's been out. And so, of course, she dies – and gives birth to
zombie baby.
And
which is one of the most ridiculous CGI things I've ever seen.
CGI? Do you think that was CGI?
I didn't rewatch it for this. As I have it in my head, it was. At mm-hmm. least like when it came to life, I think it was.
No, I assumed it was just sort of an animatronic. I don't know.
Either way, it looked ridiculous. And when she was giving birth, the first time I saw it, I was like, are we going to do zombie baby? Oh, no, they did.
Yeah. At least we didn't actually see the birther. I was waiting for like the bust out through the stomach.
Oh,
kind of
yeah.
thing, you know,
you see it push.
Another 10 years, that's what we would have seen.
Yeah.
That is something, too, that this film has. The gore factor is definitely ramped up. And I really feel like this film was a little bit more of, okay, let's do the remake and let's do it more for the zombies. Let's do it more for the gore. Let's mm-hmm. have more blood. Let's yeah. have more of this.
Way more blood.
Way more blood. And I think that's something that hurt the film mm-hmm. because it really felt like this was made for the gore.
Yeah.
Where the other one was made to tell a story and maybe get some sort of message across. This one was, let's just have people running from zombies and have lots of blood.
Right. I think the only time the mutilated gore factor played, it was one quick moment. They just get to the mall and they see like these two guys walking by and they're left like, who are they? And then all of a sudden the one guy turns and his arm's missing.
Yeah, that was a good...
That was a really good moment where you're like, uh-oh!
And apparently they actually used amputee,
yeah,
and for several of the scenes where they actually used amputees to do that, like, oh well, that was smart and that was that was effective, that was good.
Yeah, that turn and his arm's gone, and it's just because he looks fine, and
right.
then oh, the whole other side, he's like Two-Face almost.
Then
the whole other side.
Then
is
he goes speed zombie and charges.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. If they did more moments like that, you just would have been at this place where, like, by the time it was the fifth time to do it, you would have been like, I don't know who to trust.
Right.
Just shooting.
I think because of the time this was made, too, you couldn't have things like the gun shop in the mall.
Yeah.
And so you had to do a little bit more of the plot contrivance to kind of get everything together. So mm-hmm. you had the gun store across the street.
Right. I like the whole writing messages to each
sure.
other and that sort of thing.
You know,
fun.
And that's what's funny. That was the scene. Apparently, I have seen, if not the entire film, I'd seen some of this film before. Because
okay.
that was the scene I thought, oh, are they mimicking that, pulling out from another film? And then the more I watched, I'm like, oh, no, this is the film I'm trying to think of.
Okay.
So somehow I think it was probably just like on Sci-Fi Channel or Chiller Network or something like that. It had to have been on television.
Sure.
I'm sure I'd never brought it home and watched it because the beginning I didn't remember at all.
It's a good beginning. You'd remember it.
It wasn't until we get to the thing with them holding up signs and I started recognizing bits and pieces from that.
Mm.
That was interesting. But yeah, so you had to have the gun shop across the mall, and then you had to have the we eventually have to get this to happen, and how are we going to get that over to them? Oh, a dog that for some reason the zombies don't care for. They only like human flesh.
Yeah.
And the dogs
are a change from Romero.
Yeah.
His zombies eat anything.
Right. And I'm like, well, that's convenient.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this film does suffer a lot from just having to make up stuff in order to tell the story because you don't have everything that you had in 68 or 78, excuse me. So I think that's unfortunate, but what are you going to do, I guess? But if I don't know. It's kind of one of these things like, okay, great. You can tell the story and yeah, you make this stuff up, but if it's going to be, that's kind of, to me, silly.
Yeah.
To come up with all these new rules or to just have this, oh, lucky thing, this is right over here, you know. Like, oh, maybe you shouldn't tell the story.
Yeah, and the other part of it was when they were trying to figure out, like, okay, him across the street, Frank, he's starving. We got to get him food. Well, we can't just drive over there. Let's send the dog. The girl's worried about the dog. She just drives over there. And she's fine. She makes it.
She makes it over.
I thought you couldn't do that.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, uh-oh, we don't know how else to get over there. Oh, the sewer. Okay, like, where were these plans before? Like, why is the dog plan A? That's plan C. And, you know, you could have just driven over there, and you could have taken the sewers the whole time. Now, let's send Fido over. But I don't know if you watched it on the DVD. It has this whole extra thing.
The Frank's...
From Frank's point of view.
Yeah,
did you watch that?
I watched some of it.
Mm-hmm. It was really good. I like that. Especially since now you could actually have him act rather than just be, holding up a sign. And I just like the part where he's like, I'm going to try burning them. And then it just cuts to his next take, and he's like covered in ash. He's like, that didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't work. They just have a lot of burning zombies running around, and they smell like jerky.
Yeah.
And now I'm hungry.
Right. I think he was just improvising all of his scenes.
I have a feeling, yeah.
Yeah, I like that probably more than the movie. But there were still some like good moments of like there was all of that tension between Anna and Steve. And, you know, where he says, like, if I turn into one of those things, you have my permission to shoot me. And she's like, no problem. Later in the movie, he turns into one of those. She's like, I got this. It's like, that would have been me, too, because Steve was a jerk.
Mm-hmm. That was another thing, too, where the time scale of, granted, in 78, the time scale, you assume it's at least been weeks that they're at the mall.
Yeah.
Because we know that Francine was pregnant, but she doesn't, like, really start showing. It's not like she... Months haven't passed. Enough time that they were able to fortify and kind of make this their home.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do that in a few weeks. And that's how I figured, maybe a month, you know, 6 weeks maybe.
They said she was like maybe 3 or 4 months pregnant. And I don't really feel they did a lot to make the actress look pregnant. But they did that whole scene where she's like sitting up slow and arching her back. I'm like, okay. I felt that maybe like another 2 or 3 months went by.
Okay, maybe.
Because they're trying to make it seem as though she's pretty far along and she's showing. So I figured at least 3 months went by.
Okay. Well, that works in that situation for that in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
In this film, they accomplish a great deal in what can only be days.
Yeah.
I mean, because we've got the thing that helps us tell time, the guy across the street who's got limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
But they have time to fortify tour buses that happen to be in the basement. Two of them that happen to be in the basement with, you know,
like overnight.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff where it takes away for me for this movie.
Right. And one thing that they do in the original that they don't even touch on in this is the part where time's gone by. Roger is dead, and you see the area they're living in, they're furnishing it more and more because they were just like living off of the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've moved in a bed, they've got
nice
chairs, they've got tables, they've taken stuff from the mall, they've put up art.
Mm-hmm.
And Francine just sort of like, they're bored. They're really bored, even though they have, like, the whole point of a zombie apocalypse is to survive. And to survive as well as you can. And they're living it up. They're like, they may as well be royalty in this world. And they're so bored out of their mind. And she goes, what have we become? And that's what they all realize. We should probably leave here one day because we can't keep doing this. And this other movie, it's only been a few days. We're not going to think about that.
Right.
The zombies break in and that's what makes us have to leave.
Mm-hmm. Really, like in the 78, in the end, the only two people left fly away.
And that's it.
We don't know. A pregnant woman and a cop.
Yeah.
And they fly away in a helicopter.
With limited resources.
With limited resources.
No fuel.
No fuel. Nowhere. She only learned how to fly.
Right. And I like that part where he goes, how much fuel do we have? Not a lot.
Okay.
And that's better than back there.
That's the end of the film. In this one, they could have done an equally ambiguous ending. And they ruined it with the end credits.
Yeah, Zack Snyder couldn't help himself.
Yeah. Really disappointing.
Yeah.
In this one, instead of a helicopter, they get to one of the guys has a boat. So they get to the marina and find his boat. How they find his boat, I don't know. Unless I guess he drew him a map or told him exactly which one it was and where it was.
Right.
Or in which marina.
Well, it was Steve, and he was on the bus, and they kill him. So I guess, they figured out the rest.
Yeah, I guess he wrote it down. But, But they go off on the boat to try to find some island that they can live on. And they could have left it at that. And that would have been a great ending. But if you watch the end credits, they have, I found Steve's camera.
Yeah.
And which gives us our little bit of nudity for the film to, make it popular with the kids. And then we see more kind of first person shooting of the camera of them getting to the island, and
it's full of zombies.
What a shame. And
right,
we don't know what happens.
It doesn't
after that.
And the camera drops and you hear sounds and screams and shots. Doesn't sound like you hear the boat.
No.
So they die.
Yeah, I think they all die. I think you can say they die.
Where are they gonna go? They like you see that they're sailing because they drove for a little bit. They ran out of gas. They sailed the rest of the way, I think, if I'm remembering right.
Well, I think it'd have to be the case, I would think.
They have no food.
Right.
So, yeah, they're dead.
Yeah. That was a little disappointing. I would have preferred a more ambiguous ending.
Mm-hmm.
Just let them sail away.
Right. You got your story. You got your moment, and it's over.
I think they tried to mimic the scene with they find out that the I don't know the names as well on this film. Well, I didn't know the names of the old one very well enough, but Anna has kind of gotten into a relationship with one of the characters, Michael, I think it was. But it turns out he gets bit. He doesn't immediately share that knowledge until they're ready to push off from the dock, and he tells her, "I can't go."
Mm-hmm.
He shows her, "I've been bitten," and he's just gonna stand there and watch the sunset. Well, she sails away, and you hear a gunshot. And I'm like, that was mimicking
the Roger being put down
in the other film, which I think would have been – that is a good scene.
Yeah.
I think that is good. I like it.
And that should have been the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, what happened to them? That's really chilling and somber.
That really could have been just – you hear a bang, you see her face, and then the credits roll.
Yeah.
Yeah, screen to black.
And hey, look, camera! Although, I will say this. The camera scene has one of my most favorite ridiculous zombie moments ever. They've got the camera, and they see that one abandoned small boat floating.
Mm.
And then they open the cooler, and it's this like liquefied zombie head that's still alive, and it's like trying to bite at them. it's a jaw, it's eyes, and that's it.
Why was it in the cooler?
There's so little left of this, and they're like, kill it. And I'm like, you're worried about it? It can't get you. It's so over the top dumb, and even The Walking Dead has done stuff like that.
Yeah,
if you don't kill the brain, it still lives. They take the head off, and you still see the biting head trying to get you. Whereas in Romero, they said if you detach the brain from the body, it's dead.
Mm-hmm.
I like his rules a little bit more of, no, gotta kill the brain. It's gonna eat you, and where's it gonna go?
Yeah.
I think if you detach the brain from the stomach, a zombie's dead.
Well, I think actually you haven't seen it, but in Day of the Dead, that's one of the scenes I remember. There's, the scientists are doing experiments on the dead, and they have a corpse, zombie or whatever, and it's effectively completely dissected.
Mm.
And yet they hold flesh over it, and it tries to snap at it and trying to eat it, even though there's nothing to there's no way it can digest. These things can't digest. They're dead.
Right.
And even without the organs, they still try to eat. It's just this very...
So it switched.
Yeah. A little different. Between the two, I definitely enjoy the 78 film a lot more.
Yeah.
This one tries to carry some of the same message through, but it's just done with lines that just fall flat.
Yeah, it's telling.
Ving Rhames gets to say a couple things. Oh, they're here because they want this place, and
yeah,
you know, this is all they knew, and like, yeah, it doesn't really work as well anymore.
And I wouldn't say it's a bad movie. I still think it's a good movie. It's fun. It's more action than drama.
Right.
Yeah,
I hate to use the phrase for what it is, but I think it's a good film for what it is.
Yeah.
It's a very different type of movie.
Right. I wonder if if Snyder should have kind of kept to that than where he went. He did a really great, my favorite movie of his is 300. I think that's a very good movie. Should have stayed over there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I have anything else to say about either film.
No.
I think if we keep talking, we'll just end up repeating ourselves. So that's
like The Walking Dead.
Like The Walking Dead. So that's as good as time as any to leave it. Yeah, I think that's going to finish off our kind of trilogy of the remake discussion. And I'm sure remakes will come up in the future. You can't avoid it. And yeah, we'll come back and revisit this episode, this topic again. I'm sure. Well, Matt, thank you very much, and thank you for loaning me the copy of Dawn of the Dead for the Oath of Four. By the way, full screen?
Okay, you have to take into consideration, I got that DVD I think that's the DVD I got when the video store was going business. I think that was like a liquidation buy.
I have to admit, I threw it in. I've gotten so used to the widescreen.
Yeah.
I threw this in. The first thing I see is this film's been formatted. What?
Yeah.
what is this?
But also when I was first getting into buying DVDs, I wasn't paying attention to those things. Look, $5.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But yeah, that one was a video store was closing. That's why there's this old label on it, or the remnants of where the label was. Yeah. That was a West Coast video.
Gotcha.
Going out of business.
Well, I guess you got to think of the time, too. It was a 2004 film. So in 2004, there was still a little bit more of a...
Everything was widescreen.
The widescreen TVs.
Full screen.
Yeah, widescreen TVs weren't really a thing.
Yeah.
So
I have DVDs. You had the option. Yeah, I still have DVDs that are full screen. And I'm like, oh, man, I wish I paid attention.
Yes. Yeah, there was a time when... I guess it didn't matter as much to me because I still had the box TV.
Uh-huh.
But now that I've gone to the widescreen television, it's like, oh, you got to be
Look
kidding
at all
me.
This black frame. Okay.
Yeah. Definitely had to give you a little grief for that.
That's fine. I forgot it was like that. But yeah, that's why.
Gotcha.
It was $1.50. I'll take it.
Well, thank you very much for loaning it just the same. We will be back in a couple of weeks. And I think... Did we decide? We got two possibilities. We're either going to talk. We were talking about either doing disaster films or spoof films.
I think disaster would be a good kind of segue from this.
I think so, because I think you can also, there are spoof disaster films.
That's true, and we'll just keep trying to make the flow going.
Exactly. So I think we're going to look at some disaster flicks. So I'd love to hear some of your favorite disaster films.
Yeah,
these aren't films that are disasters. There's plenty of those.
We could do that.
Yeah, we could do that. These are films about, natural disasters or, any kind of disasters, I suppose. I think that'll be part of the general discussion, is just kind of hammering out all the different types of disaster films that there are. Send those suggestions to timeshifterspodcast@gmail.com. Send it or come to our Facebook group and post there. Or tweet us again. Let's see, it's at TimeShiftersPod and at Movies at the Mat. That's going to do it. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you guys later. Bye.